Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day as we're 20 minutes away now from the Chris Young Show here. We're 2 weeks and an hour away from the Major League Baseball trade deadline, and we're just 20 minutes away from resuming our weekly conversations with the Rangers president of baseball operations. CY coming up in 20. Here's Wolchuk.
All right, let's go ahead and get our football fix right after this.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
I use these for acid indigestion.
So what are we going to use these for?
Intimidation.
You know I got to get my fix, man.
All right, is Tom Brady about to be going into WWE as he has set up this feud with Logan Paul, who is one of the WWE wrestlers? Man, the whole thing was a little weird, and I'm just trying to, was it forced? Did you guys see the slap? They start getting into it, and this goes back to when he was on the Impulsive podcast, and he was joking about Logan Paul. Is he really even an athlete? And Logan Paul showed up, did the flag football thing. Him and Tom were talking, shooting the bleep with each other, going back and forth, and then they see each other at the World Cup. And Logan Paul looks over at Brady, and they're just giving each other the bird. And now we've got odds on a WWE match between Tom Brady and Logan Paul. Is this the post-career for Brady, where he's going to go, Gronk's done it? Is he about to go ahead and do WWE? Or do you think this is legit beef between Logan Paul and Brady, and they just hate each other?
It's not legit. It is a troll out for the ages. Yes, he will be doing some type of WWE whatever. He seems to be just taking money at every turn. Good Nut Water, you want to pay me? Yes, I'll take it. Fanatics, sure. I'll go and make a fool of myself, punching random things, throwing balls, playing different little games. This is the world he wants to be in right now with his hair dye.
Is it sad to see? He's just pimping himself out here, Pizza Hut commercials?
It's not necessarily sad, but it's a choice. You know, it's not something I really care to consume. It doesn't excite me in any way. He's coming out in a coffin, doing a WWE intro kind of thing at Fanatics.
Sure. Like, and he wants to be the heel. He's like, I've always been the bad guy. I feel like when our teams did really well, I would always go into those stadiums. When you go on the road and you've had success, they don't like you. So he wants to be the heel. But I think Logan Paul and WWE fans, if Hagee was here, I'd ask him. If Alec was here, I think Logan Paul's the heel. So you'd have two heels.
Man, Carl Anthony Towns looks lean next to those guys. He always looks so strong in an NBA game. Let me just say that I believed it until the slap happened. You know, the slap was a little bit two-stage. Yesterday, I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, they're barreling each other because Tom talked so much crap about pro wrestlers not being real athletes. You know, so I could see Logan Paul maybe doing a skit and Tom being like, screw you, get out of here with your bits, idiot. You know, I felt kind of bad for his kid who had to observe Tom, you know, getting it. But knowing that it's staged, I guess my take is I believe Tom Brady is one of the great undercover meatheads in the history of sports. You know, so it's kind of who he is through all of the plastic surgery and $10,000 outfits.
So Jimmy Shapiro sent us the Bet Online odds here for a singles wrestling match. Logan Paul at +550, Tom Brady at -1,000. Currently, the odds are implying the probability of Brady winning a match with Paul. Now, again, it'd be scripted. I think that they would have Brady win this thing, too. I'd probably throw some cheddar, some Prize Picks cheddar on Tommy B.
You think Tom would really get in?
In reality, no. I think Logan Paul would kick Tom Brady's ass. But in, like, a WWE, they probably set this up for, like, a trilogy type thing. They'd probably just swap.
Okay, so
victories.
I don't like pro wrestling, and I don't think it's a real sport, and yada, 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 but I do think it requires a lot of physical ability that Tom probably hasn't had for 10 years.
Okay.
You know?
Backflips and stuff.
If this, it's not going on for more than a minute. And I might even ballpark it at 15 seconds.
Yeah, just a quick cameo. He comes in,
yeah,
throws another slap or something.
Hits somebody with a chair.
Yeah.
And then runs like off.
Yeah, but Tom's not taking a fall. He's not picking anybody up.
I feel like Tom might end up not listening to the reading the script. He might just say, screw this. You have me losing? Nope. I'm not losing. Gotcha. Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
They'll work in some Spygate or Deflategate angles to give him an unfair edge.
Yeah.
And then he'll walk off with
Make sure you know Belichick pops out with a camera.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
That'd be
I don't think there's any reconciling.
No, it's probably, you're right. Those two are probably feud forever. Now, we'll stick with football with Giants running back Cam Scataboo. Now, he's done some stuff, Scataboo, with the WWE as well. He was at the Fanatics Fest. Everybody was. Fanatics Fest giving us some good July content. I mean, he was a who's who out there.
It's huge, dude. Big like, time. Are all these guys getting a bag from Fanatics
they must be.
To show up?
Because oh, yeah.
Darn right at stage said he getting spent, interviewed.
He said he spent between $80 and $90 million on this thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's big time.
That's how much they said he spent on this to get this thing done.
Well, there was a video of Scat doing his trademark backflip. Now, this has gone viral, and he does not land it, and he blamed the botch flip on the bouncy floor. Here was him talking about it because Giant fans and everybody in the NFL is like, how stupid are you? You're just coming off a massive injury. Now, right before training camp, you're doing a backflip, and who knows? You're going to break your foot again. But here's Scat talking about it.
I'm going to address the elephant. I will not hurt myself before the season. Something new to the back. I looked at it though, I was like, that's the most explosive I've seen Scat.
He over-rotated.
He did.
He said the floor was a little bouncy.
Yeah, so what happened was, I don't know if you guys know WWE or not, those floors are bouncy. So when I took off, I was midair, like, holy cow, I'm not going to land this. I'm way too high. Landed, but it had too much cushion. It wasn't a stiff, firm ground. So it's fine. I kind of like went back, safely landed, got back up. Was good to go, so nothing came out from that. I'm perfectly fine. Nothing happened. We're good.
Woo! We're good. Mm-hmm. I promise to not hurt myself before the season starts. That's a hell of a promise, man.
Yeah, I'll be
thank
ready
you
to,
for that.
I'll be ready to get back out there and be well below average week one for you guys.
Yeah, and then he was asked about the brain dead comments because people were like, yeah, this dude is not very smart. Scat said, I'm just going to keep being me. If they want to say I'm brain dead and I don't have no brain, then who cares? F it.
Yeah,
that's your real thoroughbred meathead.
Yes,
brain dead meathead.
Yeah. Nothing undercover about that guy.
You have to promise that you won't get injured before the
I
season.
I don't have no brain
because you cannot be trusted.
He's Forrest Gump. Yeah. We need a CT ESPN reporter on to cover this one.
Oh,
I feel
goodness or gracious, man! It was a fun 3 weeks or whatever. If you were a Giant fan, though, watching him and Dart make you think he had life again. I mean, those two just are not going to stay healthy for that team. It's just not even the way Dart plays. Like obviously, Dart's sitting right next to him. Like, it was fun. That's the most explosive. Because Dart does the same thing. He plays with reckless abandon, and it's great until you can only play half a season.
The Blue Tent Boys,
man. Now Bill Barnwell could have. Roster of benched players actually contend. So we got the NFL all backup team. We did have a Cowboy make this roster.
Had two of them, didn't you?
Well, because how do they do the receivers? Like, would Flannoy be considered a backup?
He would.
Yeah, because he's wide receiver three. He'd be considered a backup.
Yeah, two guys make this team, I thought.
You're an 11 an awful lot for him to be a backup.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the percentage in which they play it. They did have
Bass and Locke.
Bass made it. PJ Locke, yes, is also on here.
Okay.
But Bass, I think, like, man, I'm with it. Anytime that he's played, TJ Bass has stepped in and been pretty good. Now, as a guard, mm-hmm. I'm terrified about him possibly having to also be your backup center, and maybe he ends up being a pleasant surprise.
Sure.
Maybe he ends up really being able to play the position. But
do you consider trading him now?
No, you need that depth, man.
I think you do, too.
Got to have that depth.
Unless somebody else steps up to make you feel good about your guard depth. But, because, I mean, you could probably get something decent for him.
I think he's the one guy you have that you could actually get some, I mean, George Pickens, obviously, you could get something for.
You also had a former Cowboy and Luke Gifford on the list. as a backup linebacker.
Look at him go.
Luke Gifford's had himself a nice career.
All right.
San Francisco still?
Yeah, still in San Francisco. He's in Tennessee, San Francisco. That's a Nebraska Cornhusker right there. But some of your other highlighted backups, you had Zacchaeus in Atlanta. Will Lee already on here with the Carolina Panthers, former Texas A&M fourth-round pick. Martin Emerson Jr., Kenny Gainwell, and Kenny Gainwell definitely.
Oh, Kenny G. Mm-hmm. He's in Tampa, right?
Yeah, and he might end up being a starter there in Tampa. Tyler Allgeier, watch out for that Arizona running back room. Puna Ford and Terrence Ferguson with the Rams, that was pretty damn nice. But the Cowboys, yeah, with T.J. Bass, P.J. Locke. Maybe P.J. Locke becomes a starter at some point. Who knows? That'll be a Malik Hooker kind of question.
Is your quarterback Mac Jones?
Their quarterback, yeah, I believe it was Mac Jones. They also had Trent Brown, Aiden Fisher, and a lot of rookies have never played a snap on here. Rico Dowdle for the Steelers was part of this thing. But, yeah, quarterback for San Francisco, you did have one, Mac Jones. And Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco was also listed on here. And Jameis Winston.
Okay, nice. Yeah,
yeah, well, I feel
nice about the quarterback room right now.
Yeah, it's not bad. Like you could
for the 33rd team.
Compete and win? I think you could. I think you'd have a chance.
Three or four games.
We know this.
Really with Joe Flacco, huh?
For a full season?
We thinking that for how long you guys think? The whole season?
I'm thinking about Mac Jones, Joe Flacco, and Jameis Winston.
Joe Flacco as a starter.
I mean, he kind of slung it around last year with Cincinnati.
He did.
Go out there and win you a couple of games. Like, what'd you say, Dawson? Four wins? Yeah, I think four.
Good enough to get us all fired? Wins.
Just alternate between all the quarterbacks on there. Just like start a couple here, start a couple there.
Don't you like, play the hot hand.
If you had an all backup team, don't you think you need a badass quarterback to make up for the backup guys
well,
you got?
Yeah, but if you got a backup quarterback, he's not going to be a badass. That's why he's a backup quarterback, right? So you got the best of the backups.
Maybe people are missing on, you know, maybe they're missing on this guy.
Like, if you put the best quarterback in the league on a team with all backups, now you feel like you might have a chance?
I feel like I'd have a chance, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I do. Yeah. I do. Guy can make in some plays. Yeah. I tell you what, Dad and I were watching before I came to work. We were watching the Cowboys-Denver game when they lost 51-48.
Oh, what a game.
Freaking Tony Romo was playing out of his skull in that game.
Of course.
Like, some of the things, like the sacks that he avoided, and old man Jason Witten making plays down the middle of the field is crazy. How they were moving the ball that day.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
What a game.
Yeah.
And then you had Peyton Manning running for a freaking touchdown.
Yeah, we knew that.
Naked boot. The most naked boot of all time.
Just trots on in there. Just saunters on into the end zone. Unbelievable. We do have Warren Sharp with a little nugget, best quarterbacks when losing in the second half. Matthew Stafford's one. I don't think that's a huge surprise. He's got the most all-time comeback victories.
Of all time?
Yeah. Jordan Love at two. It's pretty fascinating.
Pretty salty.
How about Bo Nix at three? Those are your top three. Mm-hmm.
That's the one. It's like the one thing you got for Sample Bo Nix last season.
Yeah, he would come back fourth quarter. He put the team on his back. Allen and Caleb Williams.
Defense gets a stop or two and then gets him right back in the game.
Yeah.
Dax at 10, though, so Dax still does make the top 10. Mahomes was at 7 on here. The lowest, the worst of the comeback kings. Joe Flacco at 32. Cam Ward at 33.
As our guy.
C.J. Stroud at 34. Not good for Stroud. Shador, and then J.J. McCarthy.
I'm just saying, man, if we got a backup team going out there, we need better than
at least give us a good quarterback.
Yeah, give us a good quarterback.
Yeah, Mac Jones. Mac Jones was 9 on here.
I might take 2 even.
Oh, settle down.
Well, 2? Yeah, 2 of 29.
All right, got to run. Thank you, Wolchuk. Football fix in the books. CY joins us next year.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
On your home of the Rangers. All right, welcome back, G-Bag Nation, here on your home of the Rangers. It's time for The Chris Young Show here on The Fan, brought to you by Medical City Healthcare and by Lexus. Visit your local Dallas-Fort Worth Lexus dealership today. Here he is, the Rangers president of baseball operations, Chris Young. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Hey, guys. I'm well. How are you all?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. You know, it's always got a spring in my step when DeGrom's back on the hill tonight. You happy to have him back in the mix?
Yeah, no doubt. It's great to return home after a tough series in Atlanta and to have Jacob deGrom going. Certainly, you feel good anytime Jacob goes, but coming off a tough series and needing a win here at home at a point in time in our season. It's great to look at the matchups and see Jacob pitching game one.
How much of this series in Atlanta bother you, or what are your takeaways from it big picture?
Well, you know, you kind of throw out game one where we got blown out. That's going to happen from time to time. And, you know, we're facing Chris Sale, whether we lost 2-1 or 15-1, it's kind of the same result. You know, in game two, we fall behind early and the team showed incredible resilience and fight, came back and got a great win. And then yesterday we made a couple mental errors there that I really believe that if we had just made two defensive plays in that inning where we didn't execute a rundown and then we kind of stayed back on the ball at short, Zeke stayed back and we couldn't get the out at second. That's kind of where the game got away from us. But we scored two more runs after that. If we had held them in check right there, come out of that inning scoreless, who knows if we, you know, we keep the game 4-3, we may have won that one too. So, you know, I thought we played well. I love the fight in the group. I think we saw that before the All-Star break with some character wins, especially against the Astros. This team doesn't quit. They don't back down. They continue to fight, and I'm very proud of what I'm seeing there. And we got to keep it going. We're facing a tough White Sox team. We've got a really good Tampa team coming in. Then we have Seattle. And then the Astros. So we've got our work cut out for us here before the deadline. But nonetheless, you know, it's a great opportunity for us as well, because if we can win these games and beat good teams, then you feel good about the team we can be.
How much of your time is looking at that trade deadline right now with a couple of weeks to go?
Yeah, I mean, that's the cadence of the season, is that you get through the draft and you have a couple of days off at the All-Star break, and then you come back and you hit the ground running. And, you know, we've got 3 weeks here until the deadline. And so we're, you know, we're preparing for that, or 2 weeks rather, I guess, we're preparing for that and really kind of considering all avenues as to, you know, what we need to do and how we can make this team better and what this team can be, one, when they're fully healthy, and two, if we play our best baseball, which I do not believe we've played yet.
See why my general manager friends around the league, they swear you're going to be aggressive in this thing even before the deadline, that, like, you're going to make a move even before the trade deadline happens. They feel like that you've got a plan on this thing, and that maybe we're not going to wait till the deadline. You got somebody in mind you're going to go get.
Well, I appreciate the confidence and sort of my, I guess, disposition in terms of wanting to be competitive and go for it.
Right.
What I would say is that, you know, one, I do feel a responsibility to our players and our fans that when we have a chance to win, that we're doing the best we can to give our people a winning team. And so I do take pride in that, and that does govern some of our decision making. You know, I don't want to be irresponsible with that, certainly. Right. I don't want to ignore probabilities in terms of making the playoffs, but I do feel like when you've got a chance to win, that's what this game is about. And our players, you know, when they've earned that chance, we should try to support them with it. So that's why I think these next couple of weeks are really big for us. We've got a tough part of the schedule here. If we get through that, you know, we've come out of it in a good spot with the American League wide open. I really believe the talent of this team is on paper as good as anybody, but I don't think we have played our best baseball yet this season, and my hope is that it's still ahead of us. And if it is, then we're going to have a fun second half here.
See, why maybe a sensitive question here, but with the trade deadline looming, what is the current status of Corey Seager health-wise? And then with some reports that come out, his name could be involved possibly in a couple of weeks in those trade discussions.
Yeah, I really can't speak to the trade speculation. There, you know, we saw that this winter. I don't know where that stuff gets instigated, and I really can't speak to it. What I can say is, we're doing everything we can to get Corey back on the field. We really, he's such an important part of our team. We came into the season with championship hopes, with Corey being our, you know, our star player and shortstop. And we just haven't had him on the field enough this year. And so I think that as we look here, we sit here today and look at the schedule and the standings and where we are, I'm proud of the work that our group has done. I'm proud of the fight in the team. We've got our heads above water in terms of being above 500, and, you know, the state of the American League and our division is such that we're in first place. That said, there's no doubt we're a better team when Corey Seager's on the field. So our goal is to get him back on the field and hopefully do it in a timely fashion so that we can find out what this team can become. And, you know, we're hoping every day that we're getting closer to that.
Is it a guarantee that he will play again this year?
In my mind, it is. I mean, I think it's a matter of probably days or, weeks, maybe. But I don't, my anticipation is that he's trending the right direction. He's resumed baseball activity. But I can't speak to how he's feeling. I can't speak to his mental state. I can't speak to what his timeline needs to be. So, I will let Corey answer those questions. But every day, I'm certainly hoping that we're making progress. And yes, I am confident he will play again this season. I just can't tell you what that timing is.
Do you feel like you need to do something significant by the deadline to stay in first place after 162?
Well, some of that is contingent upon, the health of the team. And are we getting Corey back relatively soon? And are we getting Cody Bradford and Jordan Montgomery and Jack Leiter back? Because if we do, then by nature, it's going to make our starting pitching stronger. It's going to make our bullpen stronger as we shift a couple guys from the bullpen. And so it really kind of opens up some different avenues to try to improve the team. Obviously, anytime you get a player of Corey's caliber back in the middle of your lineup, it's going to make the entire lineup better. So some of those questions, I can't answer specifically what the needs are until we get a little closer to the deadline, because I'll at that point have a better idea from a health standpoint. I was just in Skip's office 5 minutes ago. We were discussing this, and we both agree. We both feel strongly that health is the number one thing for this club. And if we can get healthy, it's going to automatically make the team better, stronger, deeper, and at which point we may have a better idea of what we can become.
How are Monty and Bradford doing?
They're both doing really well. Monty had, I think, his fourth rehab outing this weekend. It didn't go very well, but that's expected. You got to remember, and I have so much sympathy, he's in his spring training right now, and so he's still getting his workload in, his arm built up. And I remember about mid-spring every year, my arm would kind of go through a dead arm period, and I'd have a bad outing or two. And I think that's what Monty went through this last outing. We wanted to get him to 70, 75 pitches. He only threw in the 50 range, so we're going to have another rehab outing, and I think at that point we can better assess how close he is to joining the big league team. But, we're excited about the progress he's made. The first two innings looked really good, and then kind of the wheels came off in his third inning, which is completely understandable at this point in his buildup. And my guess is in the next outing he's going to be sharper. Bradford pitched two very smooth innings. He looked great. The ball was coming out really, really well. His command was great. It was good to see Cody. It looked like kind of the old Cody, so I was pretty excited about that. His next outing will be a three-inning outing, and then my guess is we'll still do a couple more after that to get him fully built up. But they're both trending the right direction.
By my count, you drafted three or four Hall of Famers. How did that weekend go for you?
I appreciate the confidence again. I always say, ask me about the draft in 3 years. Sure. I'm not good enough.
It was a terrible question. See why? I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not. No, it's funny because you get it. Everybody's excited about their draft. My guess is 30 clubs feel good about their draft. But what I am proud of is I think we had a really good process. I think we were prepared for a number of different things. We didn't know how the draft would transpire in front of us, and when Gio Rojas kind of got to us in the first round, we were prepared. We had identified him as one of the top talents in the draft. We felt like he was worth stepping out and taking a risk, and so we were ready and were able to execute it, which I was very happy with. Our second round pick, Connor Como, an Austin kid that we've liked a lot. There was some consideration that he may slide into the first round. And so there, we did have talks about him at 16. In the end, we felt like the opportunity to add Rojas and Como 1-2 really worked out as well as we could have possibly envisioned. And then the last pick, Brody Vumela, there's a lot of hype about him, and he's going to need surgery on his elbow, but we're really good at surgeries with Tommy John, and our rehab program is tremendous, and Brody is an incredible talent. So our goal is to get him healthy, and then when he's healthy, we believe he can be, if not one of the top pitchers in the draft, certainly amongst a handful that are.
See, why when you mentioned about Rojas, and there was a lot of people around the league, again, talking to friends of mine, they were surprised that he lasted as long as he did. Was there a point in time in the draft where you're like, boys, this guy's getting to us? Did you have that moment? Well, can you walk us through that time?
Yeah, it's a great question because you've probably seen the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner. And it's funny because I think of that movie every year when we put in the draft. I don't put a note in my pocket saying,
Rojas.
But we came into the draft and a small group of us came in early that Saturday morning. And on my way in, I called Ross Fenstermaker, our GM, and I said, Ross, last night I was thinking through this, and I think if Rojas is there at 16, we really need to think about it. I could see him being as one of the ones that slide, and we really need to be prepared. And I know it would be a little bit of a step-out pick in terms of a high school arm, but I think he's one of the best talents in the draft. And Ross said that his mind was in the exact same spot. We got in, we met with Kip and the scouting staff, and everybody was in agreement. So we went through a great process to prepare for it, not really expecting or knowing if it would happen, but when it did happen, we were prepared. And that's what you have to be ready to execute on those things. And so it was a fun day for the organization. I'll have great memories, and hopefully Gio will go on and have a Hall of Fame career, like you said. But
Guaranteed.
You think about those conversations and what goes into it and kind of the excitement that builds around it, we were very fortunate. And I did hear from several of my colleagues around the league who were picking behind us that were really hoping he would get to them. They couldn't believe he slid, and they said congrats. And so it's always good to hear that feedback too.
Love it, love it. Can't wait to see what you do next. CY, give him hell. We'll be pulling for you.
Well, let's get a win tonight. Let's enjoy having Jacob back on the mound.
Yeah,
and cheers to a really strong second half here, guys. Thank you.
Shoot, yeah, we'll drink to that. There he goes, the Chris Young Show, brought to you by Medical City Healthcare and Lexus. Visit your local Dallas-Fort Worth Lexus dealership today. Okay, we got local turned national comedian. He's on tour. Scott Bedgood in studio. Joins you next year. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that. More dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Through the Fan. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Thanks to Chris Young, who just joined us. And if you have the Odyssey app, you can use your instant rewind functionality and catch that. But you should stick around here because joining us now is a comedian, a former KNC masterpiece expert, college football talker. New episode up on his podcast, on his new indoor soccer team, and he is in Plano tomorrow at the Mic Drop. It's Scott Bedgood here with you on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
What's up, man?
Excited to have you in town. Welcome. Now, you're based in Chattanooga, but you got plenty of DFW background, don't you?
Yeah, I lived here for like 12 years. Actually worked at this station for a couple months, right when the pandemic hit. Sorry about that, guys.
Okay.
I feel responsible.
I was wondering why.
Now, I blame you. To this day, I blame you.
Yeah, I feel pretty responsible about that. But it's great to be back. And headlining Mic Drop Plano tomorrow night, 7:30. You can get tickets if you go to my Instagram, at Scott Bedgood. I put the link in my stories or on the Mic Drop website.
How different is approaching stand-up comedy from compared to sports radio? Because Eric and I were talking about it, I think, last week when he brought up that you were going to be in here. It sounds like the ballsiest career move you could decide to make.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Radio is pretty risky, too. But yeah, it's pretty similar in the sense of you guys are preparing segments. You're trying to think of, okay, there's a basic way to do that segment. What's the creative way to do any segment? And so it's kind of the same thing with jokes, with how you're approaching your audience, but it is a different audience. I mean, I'm sure you guys have experienced too, when you do like a live show versus in here, some of you feel a lot funnier than you do when there's no audience. It's like you play it differently, you say things differently. What I really like about it is I have a long background in journalism and as a writer, and as writing jokes is just so different because you have to be so tight and you have to trim the fat and you have to find what's kind of the minimum way you can say that to get to the laugh as fast as possible. So it's a really fun like exercise in that way.
Fascinating. Now, you've cranked up the difficulty by not cussing at all, right?
Yeah. So I do clean comedy, and that sometimes I do say I do comedy on hard mode. just because, yeah, because, you know, I do clean comedy, and I also, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate, but I'm from Tyler, I grew up in Tyler, Texas. Mm-hmm. I don't have an accent, and so I can't really lean on anything other than the writing of the jokes and the delivery of the jokes. I don't have a fun accent to, you know, hammer home something or a cuss word to make it funnier. So yeah, it can be hard sometimes, but also broadens your audience, you know, because like I say, you can bring your parents to the show and they'll have a good time. I wouldn't bring your kids because they won't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I say, sometimes I do clean comedy, but not nice comedy. Uh-huh. Like, I'm going to say some things that a kid might not want to hear because most of the time I'm just joking about my kids. But bring your parents and they're not going to, you know, go home mad at you.
What's the worst word you have? Is it? Are you a freaking guy?
Dang-gummit.
Actually, my 3-year-old a couple days ago goes, "What dadgummit mean?" And I was like, "It means I dropped something."
I was like, dropped it.
You just get Philip Rivers mic'd up.
Yeah. I feel very Philip. That's my spirit animal is Philip Rivers for sure.
So was that a family decision, a business decision? What made you decide to go clean?
It's more just kind of who I am. Like, I think I heard Nate Bargatze say this one time, but it's kind of like be a version of yourself on stage, but like it can't be so different that when you walk off stage, people are like, "Oh, this guy's fake up there," right? Mm. Like you're kind of playing up stuff when you're on stage, but you want to be similar enough that it doesn't feel like you're just acting, right? So there's a lot of clean comics that I've met that are not clean off stage or whatever, and that's fine. You know, you're doing what you got to do. But for me, it was just I want to be who I am on stage, just ratchet it up a couple degrees, but then feel still kind of who I am off stage as well.
Scott Bedgood with us here on 105 through the Fan of the G-Bag Nation. When you first started, how was it? Did you have any times where you just bombed? I mean, what was that experience like kind of getting into the comedy scene?
For sure. So it came from my journalism. So I had done a lot of articles where I was putting myself in like really embarrassing situations. Like for Success Magazine, one time I tested out a thing. It was like a wearable that would shock you if you did like a picture nose or something. Like it was really weird. Yeah. And I had a lot of fun writing that. So I started doing more of those articles on my own and I did my own newsletter. And I like did beekeeping. I did cryotherapy, anything that kind of embarrassed me. And so one of those things was stand-up comedy because I was like, I like stand-up. I think I can do it, but I'm afraid of it. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Backdoor Comedy in Richardson, which is a clean club. So that kind of helped, you know, with that. And I was really nervous. And one of the guys, his name's Rocky Deer. Shout out to Rocky Deer. First time he goes, "Hey, don't worry if you bomb." And I was like, "Oh, I hadn't actually really considered that." Yeah. You know, I was like, "I was going to do decently," you know. And he's like, "Everyone goes up there and bombs. It's an open mic." He's like, "Just see how comfortable you feel on stage." And that kind of like made me feel, even though I was like taken aback. And then I watched like a bunch of other people go up and like, you kind of do bomb at an open mic. That's kind of part of doing an open mic. And that made me feel comfortable. But yeah, I've had plenty of opportunities to bomb in front of real audiences too. But yeah, that was that first open mic. I was pretty nervous about it, but I felt good after, you know. I got a couple laughs, and I was like, "Well, that's more than something."
All right, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go, Scott. When you do your schedule,
yeah,
do you look at places you've had success at, as opposed to places you didn't have successes? Like you walk in, like you see a club that wants to book you, and you're like, "Nah, I'm not going to that place again."
Not again. Yeah.
I am not. You know, those people in Nashville did not like me one bit. No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
are there places when you set your schedule that you favor over others?
Yeah, I will say, like, I've actually had a lot of success in kind of mid-sized, smaller towns. Like, one of the first really, really good shows I did when I was early in comedy was in Waco because they don't have a comedy club. And right. So they do like a monthly show and people are pumped about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that in a lot of other towns, similar size, where they like get really jazzed about it and they're excited. But then, you know, sometimes in Dallas, we have a million entertainment options. We have a bunch of clubs and I've had a lot of shows at clubs where it's just like people, you know, they're kind of like, I wish I was doing something else. Right. Mm-hmm. I could have gone and seen like a concert down the street, but I came here. So yeah, there's some times where I'm like, you know, I'd actually rather go to this small town than, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's whoever's going to pay me, I'll take
sure,
that.
Yeah. So, I figured the money's all, I mean, yeah, if you could get it, it's great. But I just wondered if psychologically you go to these places and like, man, I didn't feel comfortable doing my show at this place. Or, you know what, I knocked this one out of the park.
100%.
These people are my people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I definitely feel feel that more kind of in smaller towns sometimes. Sure. Yeah.
How do you like going into a town and like dunking on their sports teams?
Oh, that's the most fun. Yeah. When I did that in St. Louis in front of 3,000 people opening for Dusty Slay, I did a joke about the Cardinals. And every other place I've done a joke about their sports team, it kind of gets like a, oh, and then like a clap. And the Cardinals one, they were like, oh, hey, whoa, buddy. It was like 3,000 people like
you crossed booing the line.
Me. Yeah, and like a guy came up to me afterwards, and he was like pretty hammered. And he was like, hey, man, you watch it about the Cardinals. You know, he's like, I liked your stuff, except you better not. And I was like, dude,
I liked your stuff.
And I had to bail out of it because I didn't want to like lose them for the rest. So I was like, hey guys, I'm just a bitter Rangers fan. I'm still bitter about game six. And then they were like, yes,
well played.
Yeah. And I was like, if you know where David Freeze lives, though, let me know. I will. I'm going to go to his house.
Scott Bedgood is in studio with you here. He'll be at the Mic Drop Plano tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Do the Cowboys give you content?
They do, but I don't know. So I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it's just not a pro sports town there. And so, you know, stuff doesn't really work in that area. But when I go to Atlanta, when I go to Nashville, I can hit some Titans jokes. I can hit some Falcons jokes in Atlanta. But I try to do some Cowboys stuff sometimes just because I, you know, would have the idea like, oh, they're everywhere. Yankees, Lakers. And, you know, it didn't work as well as I thought. You know?
As an OU guy, were you ready for Texas jokes?
Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah.
just write themselves.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I do love an A&M joke, too.
A&M joke.
Yeah, I did one of those at the Majestic. That went well. I really enjoyed that one. But yeah. Yeah.
What is your what's your greatest moment on stage?
Man, that's a good one. I did the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville about 6 weeks ago. And I mean, that's hard to beat. Like just the backstage area, you're just seeing all the pictures of all the legends, every country music, every music legend you've ever seen is back there. And to walk out on the stage and like all of that was like, I that can't be topped. And it was a really good crowd too, but it was just like, just to have that opportunity, I was just like, that never crossed my mind that I would get that, you know, to play on that stage. I didn't even know they did comedy shows there. So that was absolutely like the top moment.
How far do you look into the audience when you're doing a show?
Ideally, not far at all. Yeah. Really? So the theater is like the Majestic Theater here is great because like the lighting is so good that like when I went out there, did the show, and then after the show, I realized like, oh my gosh, people are way closer than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, the one in St. Louis was like a rock venue and the lighting was not good. I could see all 3,000 people that didn't like me.
Oh, no.
and that did make me nervous. You know?
You know, you got a nice little college bit here, Cook.
Yeah, I do.
Us,
I do.
So, I know you're a big college football guy.
Yeah. So I used to be, appear on KNC, the KNC Masterpiece when they were on at night, and I was their college football expert because I wrote a book called Lessons from Legends, where I interviewed 12 college football Hall of Fame coaches like Barry Switzer and Steve Spurrier and R.C. Slocum. So that was back in the day, and what I did every week was I had a name of the week where I'd find like a really great college football name and just kind of bring that up.
Player's name,
yeah. So, but for this, because we're preseason, I want to give you guys each a sort of a college football spirit animal, okay. Like your name for the season to keep up with. A lot of thought went into these, so I've got cards. So if you could pass this over to Gavin, he'll go first.
There we go.
Look at yours yet. Okay.
Don't look.
Should I look at mine yet?
Okay, hold on. All right, go.
Okay. Memorable factor?
Yes, memorable factor. Because you are, you know, the general, you're the most memorable factor, and that is a linebacker for Duke.
Okay.
He's a grad student from the UK. I don't think he's going to play a lot, but he is a pretty memorable factor. So there you go.
I'm scouting him up.
Yeah. Let's see.
Watching special teams, bro.
Lucius.
Yo. Let's see what I got here. Oh, my gosh.
Please say young black goat.
Camorian Pimpington?
I think it's Pimpton.
Pimpton?
He's Pimpton.
Can you say it again clearly? I want to hear it.
Camorian Pimpton.
Okay. I gave you that one because I just wanted to hear you say Camorian Pimpton. I knew you would do it better than anybody else. He's graduated from Crowley. LSU and now plays at TCU. Like that the guy named Pimpton only plays for purple teams.
Yep.
So that feels appropriate.
Yes.
Walchak?
Pig Cage.
Yeah, Pig Cage. That's a real player.
Should I be offended by this?
Yeah. You know.
That's a sniffer bag.
Pig Cage, he is a DB for Incarnate Word.
Okay. Oh, there we go.
And he played, listen to this, he's gone to Nichols, LSU, UTSA, Louisiana Tech, and now UIW.
Yeah.
I picked that one, not for the pig reason, but because your mind is like a steel trap. You know everything. You're an expert in everything, every sport. So I appreciate that. Cage.
I think you just rattled his cage a little bit. That was Rowdy Tellez moment, I feel
I'm
like.
What a Jewish thing, was it?
I like that one.
not very kosher of a show.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. All right, Bronis.
All right, here we go. Rocky Beers.
Rocky Beers.
Yes. Rocky Beers.
I think we know that one, yeah. Tight end, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But also Air Force and Florida International and Colorado State. I picked Rocky Beers for you because you know what you're getting with Rocky Beers.
You are.
He's a tight end. He's from Colorado.
Yep. Yeah.
He looks exactly like you want Rocky Beers to look.
Right.
And that's what we got with Broadus, well, right? He's the expert. He's gonna give you the straightforward info that you need. And he's been a lot of places.
I appreciate that. With Rocky Beers, I hope at Oklahoma he does a beat up on my LSU guys this year.
Well, you know,
I don't
we'll
need
see.
Rocky to be successful. That's
okay,
all I
I'm sorry. To
Not that week.
Not that week.
I'm following along with Pig Cage.
Yeah, you like Pig? Okay, and then we've got a cheer follow. Everyone, back up. We need this one clean.
I'm not reading this, dude. Hey,
I knew it! You gotta read it.
Can we get it clean?
Noah. It's just Noah.
Can we spell the last name for us?
It starts with a K.
Uh-huh.
N.
Uh-huh.
I.
Yep.
Double G A.
Okay.
And but don't forget the K.
Right.
At the beginning.
So what would that be?
That would be... you're putting me in a bad spot right now, dude. Golly,
someone should have clean show. He has somebody else do his dirty work.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Let's go.
Okay, Noah.
That's strong, dude.
I'm going to add some letters. I'm going to say ka, nay, ga, I guess.
There you go.
I add put a few extra
there.
Letters, you know.
Comedian Scott Bedgood.
That's a mic drop. Right there.
He is in Plano Scott. At the mic drop tomorrow. Go get you some tickets.
Yeah.
Scott, it was great to see you. To meet you.
Yeah.
Former fan
there.
Employee. He's a comedian. He's touring and he's in studio with us.
Damn you, Scott.
Thank you so much. We got three down and 90 minutes to go. What are we doing next, Eric?
Royal Rumbles, disrespectful list, and a little college football for you next in the nation.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.